Today's episode of Blast Burn Radio was brought to you by LA Caveman, Flamin' Air, Cassie, and other listeners just like you. If you'd like to support Blast Burn Radio, you can do so over at patreon.com/challengeaccepted media. You can pledge your support and start earning exclusive rewards today. Thank you.
They said, look, you're a bomb, and I'm going to bring you to be a bomb. Do you understand? And she was like, I love you. You could do no wrong to me. I love naive Pokemon. It's great.
Did you get more wood?
Oh, yeah.
I had a strategy of just feeding my Marowak all the drugs.
That's not medical advice. I'm not liable. Podcasts aren't real.
You are now listening to Blast Burn Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Blast Burn Radio. I am your host, Stephen Charbonneau, and I am trying desperately not to laugh at my co-hosts. Our hype train friends are speculation co-hosts, Anna Maservier and Celeste Dreyer. Anna, Celeste, how's it going today?
It's pretty good. We've had a good laugh before starting this podcast about how great podcast professionals we are. Incapable of counting or doing the big clap. Evidently.
I've had a really shitty day, but I'm laughing now that I'm hanging out with these people.
It's good stuff. It's good time. My brain is a little bit fried. Here in real time, we are working desperately to get the Nuzlocke World Tour relaunched, even as we are producing other content for you guys on the show for like immediate release and consumption. And I have like lived, slept, breathed, ate, and shit Pokemon for like the last 48 hours. And I need a goddamn break, guys.
You remember that part where we said good work-life balance is one of our priorities this time around, and that we proceeded not only to pre-record gameplay and like video stuff and audio stuff, but we're also making bonus episodes at the same time? Yeah, we didn't get the memo on our own our own shit.
Again, we're great professional podcasters.
Very good.
That's okay, because I'm eating and breathing and shitting Pokemon right now so that in 2 weeks I can fucking just sit on my ass and watch Power Rangers and know that the podcast is still coming out. So, you know, balance. Now, guys, I'm really excited to point out that Anna and Celeste are not the only people here with us today. And for the first time in a very long time, that's not because we have like a one-off guest or a friend who is just joining us. For the first time in a long time, we have a new boy on the show, that good fresh boy, that first time long time boy.
Who's actually a boy, as a point of note.
Yeah, it is a boy, and we'll hope. I don't want to say we'll hopefully remain so, because you live your truth, buddy. But also, I feel real bad when I listen to old stuff where I'm constantly referring to Anna as a boy. And I'm like, oh, no, I didn't know. I'm sorry. So maybe we just don't have boys anymore. I don't know.
You're next, Steven. We will drag you to the side.
I am pretty, pretty comfy in my dad fucking clothes. Thank you. But if you hang around Blast Burn Radio Spaces, or if you just follow the things that I work on, this new boy's name is probably familiar to you. He thinks steel types are the bee's knees, and he enjoys Japanese men in spandex at least as much as I do. Say hello to our producer and our dear friend, Patrick Miller, or as you may know him, Pokey Ranger Pat. Pat, buddy, welcome to the show. For those of our listeners who maybe don't know you, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hey, everyone. I'm Patrick Miller, Pat, Poker Ranger Pat, whatever floats your boat. You know, I'm here producing, and I'm an asset analyst. I do lots of spreadsheet things, and that's pretty much most of my life.
I love how Steven was like, hey, Pat, introduce yourself. And you can almost see the nervousness set in. Pat is on an official episode of Blast Burner.
Yeah, there's a bit of nerve there. A little bit.
We love you, Pat. I'm just teasing you.
Now, again, if you follow the stuff that I work on, you're probably familiar with a podcast project that Pat and I worked on together, which was Bandora's Palace, our tokusatsu podcast, which is currently on hiatus. It's really difficult to build like the enthusiasm and the momentum to do like a Power Rangers and Sentai like watch along rewatch podcast when like all of the contracts and things that make those accessible media to watch along with are falling the fuck apart out of the sky because Hasbro has decided to nuke the fucking ground from orbit. So we'll see. We'll see if and when that project comes back around. But I am very happy to be able to bring Pat on in a more official role on this project. Pat has been a big help to us in the community as a moderator and a patron and a friend for a very long time. And now is helping us on the back end with pre-production and post-production, and will also be joining us more often on the show, giving us a different and frankly younger voice on these discussion episodes. Don't panic. We're not bringing Pat on because we're saying, and now Anna and or Celeste is going away forever. That's not the case.
Anna, as the oldest member, has expired.
But we did sit down and realize that, hey, we're a bunch of boomers, basically, on this podcast. Like, we're all old as fuck. Like, we all started Pokemon in the exact same place with Red, Blue, Yellow back in the late 90s. And, like, I think it's important for, like, these type of panel discussions to have someone for whom that's not their mentality, their mindset, their age range. And Pat's a little bit younger than we are, came into the fandom in a different place. And so, we're really excited and hopeful that he's going to provide a very different, unique and useful, like, viewpoint to those type of discussions. So welcome, Pat. We're very, very happy to have you and your own considerable charm and wit here on the mic. Now, we have a lot to cover today, but we do have something of a tradition around here when it comes to bringing on new boys, to onboarding the boys. So let's take a few minutes to get to know you, Pat, and your relationship with this franchise that we all have this very strange and passionate love-hate relationship with that we're in release season, so I think it's currently tilting much more towards love at the moment. So starting off, why don't you tell us a little bit about your love of and history with Pokemon as a franchise?
Well, you say started at a different place, but I really started at the same place, just younger. I started actually with Red back in 98, maybe. I don't remember. I was like 6-ish, give or take. But I've been playing since Gen 1, since a friend of mine lent me his Red, and I caught a seal with his Master Ball. Because I was a child.
That's perfect.
But, yeah, the one that I remember, like, most enjoying and really sparking the fandom in me was Silver, specifically. You know, Gen 2 was kind of my real sticking point. But yeah, I've been playing ever since, and once I found Blast Burn Radio, I started doing Nuzlocke, and that's very much changed my view on a lot of things. Some of you may have heard of the Dicketeers play-along group. I'm currently heading that group, and we're insane, and it's great.
You have Steven here being like, we need a new youthful voice. When did you start? Pat's like, I also started with Red. Welcome to the Poke Boomer fucking hut.
In my defense, I was a child.
Yeah, the difference is that Pat was in his fucking pull-ups when he was playing Red, Blue, Yellow. Like, it's a different experience, right? Like, I don't want to speak for you, Pat, but like my younger brother, who is a Zoomer, like officially on paper at least, he was born in 97. Like, his first Pokemon game was, I believe, Gold. I believe I handed down my copy of Gold to him. Like, he doesn't like his when he thinks of his earliest memories of Pokemon, it's not playing Gold. He was like 4. He was a baby. Like, his earliest memories are playing Gen 3 or playing Emerald when he was actually old enough to read the text on the screen and understand what's going on. So that's. Yeah, like, your first game was Red, but I, like you said, that's not the most formative to your early fandom, right?
Correct. Yeah, I had Red, I had Yellow, you know, I got those with my Game Boy Color, And then, you know, Silver was really the one that kind of drew me in and stuck me to the franchise. And of course, you know, the anime, because I was a child. And I watched all the cartoons.
The anime was certainly a thing. I want to say the anime was always good, but we all know that's not true.
that isn't true.
It's not.
To be honest, at 10, I didn't like the anime that much.
Like, it was good enough for 7-year-old me, so.
Oh, for sure. I watched the shit out of the anime when I was a kid. No shade here. Now, the real tough question, Pat, your very first playthrough, very first save file. Who was your first starter, your original best boy? Do you remember why you picked him, and is he still your favorite?
My first starter was Charmander. Yeah, I know. Go ahead.
Celeste over here with the hipster judgment looks.
Oh, whatever. I'm just going back to your judgment from the last time we did this.
I was like 6 or 7. It was on fire, and it was a lizard, and I like lizards.
I'm right there with you.
What more do you want?
I can't deny that logic at all.
Fair, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw Charizard in my friend's file, and like, that's a flying fire lizard. That is awesome. And that's all I needed.
I mean, that's pretty solid logic. Is Charizard still your favorite of the OG trio?
No, actually. When I first joined VVR, I was coming in for the Blastburn Radio Pokemon League, and that really actually ignited my love for Venusaur with Mega Venusaur. And I've played with Bulbasaur and Venusaur in a few other games, and it's really struck a good chord with me. So Bulbasaur is kind of my jam right now.
I love Mega Venusaur. You're okay, Pat. I like you.
So of the games that you've played, I know that you started with Red and you carried through, but of the games you played, which game or set of games is your favorite? Which one holds that special place in your heart, and what makes it special to you?
I think there's a couple answers to this. Kind of the which one was your favorite as a formative, and which one's the favorite now? Formative years, like through most of Pokemon, my favorite was Crystal. I really liked it. I actually really enjoyed playing as the female character. It was just really cool. I liked having that option, and I was like, this is a new option, gotta do it. And I really liked, like, I really liked Johto for a long time. A long time. I was a Gen 2 kid.
A Gen 2-er?
Yeah. Currently, I think right now my favorite is actually Black and White 2.
It's a good choice.
Even playing through and getting my ass handed to me by a couple of other people, it just, the story was good for me. I liked the changes to the region. I liked the open Pokedex. It hit all the spots for me.
That is a very difficult pick to argue with. Bravo, sir. Of the games in the series that you've played, which I know the answer, and I'm preparing myself for the backlash and the salt. Which game did you enjoy the least, and what bothered you about it?
I really hate Gen 6. X and Y are just bottom tier. That's... I mean, and I actually spent some time thinking about this. Because a lot of the stuff that I've expressed recently is from the Dicketeer's run, and there's a lot of other aspects that play into that. But, you know, just thinking back to the first time I played X and Y, particularly Y, I had Y, that was mine. I know I went through it, it was sometime in college, so I played through, and I finished the main story, and I put it down, and I never picked it up again. I didn't pick that up again for years. There was nothing in it that compelled me to want to go back to it. And having gone back to it for a challenge, you know, I think I can appreciate the region itself. But there's a lot of aspects to it that I really don't like. You know, the lack of Megastones, the emphasis on Gen 1 things. Like, I like Gen 1. It's cool. But, like, there's just a lot of emphasis on it. In my eyes, a lot of TMs that you can't get until post-game. The fact that the gym leaders only have 3 Pokemon pretty much almost the entire way through, that annoys me. The E4 only having, they have 4 or 5, I don't remember. I think it's 4 and then Diantha has 5. And that just feels wrong for the end game to me. So that's kind of where I stand. And I think outside of challenges that I've done, that's still my answer.
I mean, I think that's really valid. Like, we will be talking about this soon, but X and Y are certainly polarizing games in the fandom, and I don't think there's going to be a lot of argument with the fact that, like, they're very pretty and aesthetic and, like, look and feel good, but also, like, that they're kind of shallow. Like, that's, I think, a very reasonable read on those games, certainly. Here's one that's always a very difficult question for any fan of Pokemon. Gun to your head, you must choose one. Which Pokemon is your favorite? Who and why?
So right now, and again, this is one that changes on a fairly consistent basis. But right now, I think I'm going to go with Mega Aggron. Since I got him in the first season of BBR Draft League, he's always been power. He's been sturdy. I freaking love the look of Mega Aggron. It's super cool. He does everything that I could ever ask him to do. And of course, he's my Steel Boy and Steel type best type. But shout out to Florgis, favorite non-steel.
Those are both very good Pokemon. Mega Aggron is very much a Mecha Godzilla, and I am here for that 100%.
It's my boy.
You must choose one. Who is your least favorite Pokemon? What you like about them?
I took a little bit of time because I couldn't figure it out. And then I was reminded, Fion exists, and I fucking hate it. Fion is the worst. It is Manaphy Light. You can't get it without breeding a Manaphy, which teased legendary breeding, which guess what? You still can't do for anything else. It doesn't evolve. It has no purpose, and I hate it.
That very strong sentiment.
That's fair overall, I think. I mean, honestly, you could probably extend that sentiment to Manaphy itself. Like, before the 20th anniversary, like, Year of Legendaries event, was that the 20th anniversary? It was somewhere around there. It was during Sun and Moon. They did the 20th, the big Year of Legendaries, everything was available. They were sending out mythics like they were candy. Before that, you couldn't get a Manaphy unless you had a new in-box copy of Pokemon Ranger. Like, once it had been claimed once, it could never be claimed again, which was maybe the dumbest gimmick in the history of Pokemon. And yeah, fuck Manaphy a little bit. I'm on board.
Honestly, I kind of hate all mythics.
Look, I love my little pixies, and fight me. Manaphy, at least, I think, felt... I mean, especially at the time, because I got a new thing for Ranger. I don't think I ever actually redeemed the Manaphy. I'm going to have to go back and check on that.
Oh, do that. Do that.
Like, it was a cool connection. But Fion... Yes.
Fair. Okay. Well, that is our new boy. Welcome to the show, Pat. We're really happy to have you. And we can all look forward to having Pat in front of the mic from time to time to give us his unique take on things, and behind the mic a lot of the time helping to make this show happen. So everybody be sure to give your love and support to our good boy, Pat, who's doing good work, whether you are directly hearing his sweet dulcet tones in your ears or not. And now, moving on to the main topic of today's show, let's talk about the big ticket in the Pokemon community right now. Let's talk about Pokemon Legends Arceus. Now we obviously, we had our big, breakdown of all of the Pokemon Week announcements last week. And so we talked about this title a little bit, mostly in broad strokes with like a couple of finer points that we hit on. Before we kind of get into the meat and potatoes of today's episode, Pat, did you have any thoughts you wanted to throw out just on the fact that this is a game that is going to exist sometime in the next year?
I'm super hyped for this game. Like the teaser they put out just looks really cool. And I really like the idea behind it. Like the idea of making the first Pokedex. And I really like that they're branching out into almost a different style. So I'm pretty hyped for this.
Fair. Very fair. Okay, so for today's episode, we could really like dig out the prospecting pan if we wanted to, right? Like we could sift through that 4-minute trailer and we could get like the most granular details and just pick it apart. But ultimately, that's kind of a masturbatory act, right? Because we don't know almost anything about this game. We don't. We know that it's an action RPG. We know that it is a primarily, if not exclusively, single-player experience. We know that it is going to be a much more open world, Breath of the Wild adjacent experience. Beyond that, we know next to nothing. So let's not pretend that we do. And instead of trying to make educated guesses when we really have nothing educated to leap from, let's make wild gestures of speculation instead and just have fun with it. So let's talk about, let's dreamcast Pokemon Legends a little bit. From the shoes of we know almost nothing about what this game is going to be, let's talk about what we want it to be, what we would make it into if we were in charge of development at Game Freak. So, Anna, Celeste, Pat, what do you want Pokemon Legends to be? How do you want it to play? What types of features and like story hooks and gameplay loops would you want to see included in this game? And conversely, what are some potential problems for this game and type of game that you can see looming on the horizon that you are hoping that Game Freak will not fall into?
So realistically, if you're going to do like an open world RPG, like the benefits of a game like that are it's the open world that you're selling people, right? It's the exploration aspect. It's the, you know, you go where you want and you discover things as you go. Like one of the strengths of Breath of the Wild, as an example, is it's a game where there is a plot, but you can get to it when you feel like it. And the rest of the time, you're kind of like going around and finding cool things and doing stuff in the world. And that's a lot of fun. And very much Mario Odyssey is a different game, but very similar in a lot of ways. How well you manage to do that, how much content to wandering there is, tends to be the gauge of successful open world games, right? Like it's great to explore and walk around, but if there's nothing to do, then people are just bored. So, you know, I'm hoping that we keep and capture the good aspects of open world, really get to see, you know, a Sinnoh region in all of its pre-civilized glory, lots of natural formations, lots of interesting mythical places. Like we talk about Spear Pillar in Sinnoh, right? As this like really important place in Sinnoh and in the Pokemon world and its relationship to Palkia and Dialga. You know, give us more of those places that we couldn't see on a game that was the size and scale of Diamond and Pearl, right? Like, it's a microcosm of what Sinnoh actually is. So, really hoping to see that stuff. Give me more places to explore. Like, we'll talk a little bit about that later when we get into the what does this journey look like. But the pitfalls, like I said, is not enough content, not enough direction. Like, it cannot be too directed to capture what you want, but if it is too directed, you won't get, like, you need both. You need to find the happy medium between I'm lost and I don't know what to do to go here, do this, get the thing done. The story hook is going to be important, like how they present things and get you motivated to go explore and do things. The get out and go push is going to be important. And it, given the fact that this is a basically uncivilized region, it would be really easy to under-deliver there to the detriment of the entire game. How the Pokemon stuff is managed, the Pokemon-specific stuff is managed, is also a concern, right? Like, open-world Pokemon's cool because Pokemon live in the world. That's great and awesome. But how it works functionally when you're doing something that's entirely different from the formula, not only do you risk having it feel bad because nostalgia is a thing, but the function of just like running through the grass, like in the trailer, just hucking balls in every direction is like one of the wackiest, weirdest things I've ever seen. You just got like a bag of them. You're like Pokeball claws, just hucking shit all over the place. How you engage in like battles, if there are even battles. You know, I imagine that Pokemon who have never seen human beings before, like, we probably won't get into the nitty-gritty of, like, what that would actually look like, but that would be wild. Like, animals today who live in areas inhabited by humans, even though they're not hyper-intelligent, they understand to a certain extent what civilization is and to avoid people and stuff like that. That's not the case in a place where people aren't around. And these things aren't squirrels. You're dealing with like really dangerous creatures who are not used to having their natural habitat invaded by our hero in a time not appropriate cap.
I'm kind of a lot in the same boat. Really, things that I'd like to see is, like, you've got your main story, but almost, like, separate stories. Because there's a lot of different Pokemon that you could make a small arc about. You've got your big overarching arc, you know, your Arceus arc. But, like, in Sinnoh, you've got, like, the Azelf, Mesprit, and Uxie, and all these other big things that could command their own mini arc. And I'd like to see, you know, I'd like to essentially build up through the main arc.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I also think that there's a lot of room here. And what I really need to see is, I am concerned that they are going to take the fact that this is a region that is lightly inhabited as an excuse to just make it utterly devoid of human hands. And there definitely should be places like that, right? Like, that is kind of the promise of, like, the open world, the natural beauty. Like, yes, let us see the world as it is. But also, and I mentioned this last episode, and still very true, for me at least, Pokemon has always been about the way that Pokemon and people interact. That is a core and fundamental part of the series, and it needs to be present here. Again, give us the family of four who have gone out to start their own Miltank ranch, and they're having trouble with predators. They're having trouble with, like, a local population of Luxray, and you have to go, like, find a solution there. Like, give us meaningful interactions with people, and those people having meaningful interactions with Pokemon, and then it will feel like a Pokemon game. And I think that that is really important in this game, finding a space within the franchise. I'm all for a greater sense of exploration. I mean, y'all have heard me. My single biggest criticism of Sword and Shield is that there is literally nothing to explore outside of the wild area. And the wild area, or outside of the DLC wild area specifically, the actual real wild area is not really even big enough to call anything you do there exploration. But, you know, that's what sucked about recent games, and especially the most recent games. So give me a game that has a lot of that. I'm all for it. But that can't carry a Pokemon game by itself. There has to be balance. I am genuinely concerned that it is going to be too open world for its own good, that it's just going to be Crown Tundra. Like, my big criticism of Crown Tundra so far is it's just another wild area with a legendary Pokemon checklist. And it's just like, these are my tasks. Like, aside from the Calyrex story, there's not even a big story hook drawing you into the rest of them. It's just this weird dad who's just like, hey, legendary Pokemon are cool. You should look into them. Bye. And that's it. Like, it's not, there's no compulsion to do anything in Crown Tundra other than just wanting the legendaries. Or wanting to check off boxes on that checklist. And that is not enough to carry an entire game, I don't think. Not by a long shot. I think that there are a lot of, like, really good content loops that Legends could fall into. In particular, if they just give us, like, on-world shiny sprites, and shinies in general, which are not necessarily a guarantee for this title, but if shinies are in, and they give us on, like, open world shiny sprites the way that Let's Go did, they will immediately become a favorite for shiny hunters everywhere. Because for all the flaws in Let's Go games, shiny hunting in Let's Go was more exciting than it has ever been anywhere else, because you could see them spawn and had to chase them down. And there was a real danger that they would run away and you wouldn't actually get the shiny, which made for a really compelling shiny hunting experience. And you could easily recapture that here in what could ultimately be a much superior game. I also think, taking another page out of Let's Go's book, we must have interactable and particularly rideable Pokemon in this game. If you cannot ride a Rapidash through the rolling fields of Sinnoh, then Game Freak has failed in a deep and fundamental way with this particular product.
But Steven, we're going to invent roller skates. Through the grass.
Yeah, you should be able to ride, and you should be able to fly on Pokemon as well.
Yes.
Or climb with your Pokemon. Like, there's so much potential for getting different ways of getting around with different Pokemon.
So that kind of segues actually pretty nicely into our next topic, which is, how should these games be structured? What does the journey look like on the macro scale? What does the overarching story of the game, the Arceus story, whatever that turns out to be, what would you have that look like? How would it be structured? And then is there like a micro journey? You know, your average Pokemon game has your micro journey, which is your gym quest, and then your macro journey, which is saving the world from the doom of whatever legendary Pokemon is waking up from its nappy nap this particular week. And I'll start us off here because I've actually got really strong feelings. I think that of all things, Sun and Moon showed the way for how you could really well do a micro story in Pokemon Legends that feels very much like a Pokemon game. You know, we know that canonically in the Pokemon world, Pokemon seek out trainers because they want two things. Almost universally, they want to get stronger and they want to evolve. They are driven to evolve. And they have recognized through years and years and years of cohabitation that the best way for them to evolve is to team up with a Pokemon trainer who will help them to get stronger. So that raises the question, what do they do in a world where there aren't Pokemon trainers, where they don't have people to team up with and get stronger? And I think that the answer there is, or at least very clearly could be, totem Pokemon. Instead of training under people, they train under bigger and stronger Pokemon of the families or the archetypes that they represent. And so you could very easily replace your more traditional gym quest with a series of trials, maybe reminiscent to like the Komo-o trial, which was entirely unmanned in Alola, where, you know, maybe in your grand journey, in your macro adventure, you need to get to this place in Mount Coronet that is utterly blocked by boulders, and you can't pass through that obstacle. But there is a fighting dojo, a Machamp nest nearby where a massive hulking Machamp trains with other fighting Pokemon all day, and you have to go in, you have to kick their door in, you have to kick their shit in, show them that you're the alpha, and then they will teach you how to break those rocks, or they will come and break them for you. And in that way, you can facilitate the exploration, you can open up parts of the world, and it would still very much feel like a Pokemon game. And so that is my single biggest wish for these titles, is I want them to give us what amounts to a gym journey while showing us kind of why the gym system even exists, that this isn't just something that people decided, hey, this will be a fun, cool thing to do, but that this is nature in the Pokemon world. I think that would be a really neat and novel take on the premise of the entire franchise.
I hadn't even considered that, but what I think that we are going to see, maybe in conjunction with that, is we've been lamenting how there hasn't really been dungeons like available. And those are things that lend themselves really well to an open world experience, particularly like native shrines where some of these godly Pokemon exist, right? And with the implementation of raid adventures, like I think the idea of a blended experience with dungeons and raid adventures together would be really fascinating. Like working your way through, you know, this puzzle area, and then there are actual like boss battles in there for you and your team to work through. Like that's a really interesting way to build on the mythology of the place while giving that sense of exploration and problem solving, puzzle solving, like as you go. Like additionally, like you mentioned, what is the relationship between Pokemon and people when there are no people, right? Like I think the Arceus question like really comes down to is this a story of people trying to figure out like this god that these creatures seem to worship, like in exploring and trying to find that out? Or is this a situation where the initial confrontation between people and Pokemon and your trainer hucking balls everywhere invokes the protection of Arceus, god of all Pokemon, to keep them safe? And so the people who live here are like, what the ever-loving heck was that? Like, we need to go figure that out if we want to live here. And on the way, the journey is finding out that Pokemon are benevolent creatures who can be your friends and they're not your enemies. Like, it's the story of the two worlds coming together. Like, I think that's That's probably what I would do. And I'm hoping that we get some of that.
I will say with the open world aspect of adding it to Pokemon, they're going to need to do more than just allow you to run around and chuck balls too. There's going to need to be some meat there as well. Whether it not be a crafting system or a better exploration system or finding markers or finding something in the world. Having you run out, throw balls, and run back to the city to get more balls is going to be an issue.
Especially if there's only one.
Mm-hmm, exactly. There needs to be something there, either a crafting system or a way to interact to get more things beyond going to that one city.
So I'm real big. I was actually real big in the totem thing also. Like that was the first thing that came to my mind. It was like totems are definitely like perfect for this style. I'm really hoping that the city that we're in isn't the only settled area. Like, I understand it's not a very settled place, but I feel like if it's on such a scale that Sinnoh, I think, will be, there should be a couple of settlements hanging around, you know, somewhere up north or wherever the snowy area is. You know, you've got your hardened little settlement there and some people on like a little shipping area, you know, just starting commerce with other places. You know, our professor has to get into the region somehow.
Well, I mean, correct me if I'm mistaken. I've only ever done the one playthrough of a Sinnoh game with Blast Burn Radio. It's not the region that I am the most familiar with, but wasn't like the canonical thing with Cynthia that her and her grandmother were descended of the original inhabitants of Sinnoh? So like there is probably some degree of native or aboriginal population. You know, we are the settlers who have come to Sinnoh, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're the only people here. Lord knows, looking at the world, there are plenty of places that history will tell you were empty until white men showed up to live there, and that's almost never true. And on the other side of the world, the same thing is true of Japanese people. So, you know, that's yes, I would be very surprised if the one city that we're like, this is where the people are, is the only people in the region whatsoever. Like, even if that's mostly true, there are still going to be like the frontiersmen who kind of blaze the trail and move ahead of the rest of the civilization. There are going to be like the loners who don't want to live near people, who just kind of go out in the middle of nowhere and tell you to get out of their swamps, as it were. I'd be very surprised if it really was just, this is the city, the people are here, everything else is Pokemon, baby. I don't expect that to be true. I don't think that there's really much of any way that that's a thing.
We will discover a full Pokemon city and then demolish it in traditional human fashion.
Oh, no.
And I'm not going to beat my own drum again for 10 minutes, but I will just point out, in regards to the Arceus story, I have already called my shot in that it is going to be a time-traveling Cyrus story. He is going to be the MacGuffin. He is going to be the key that links the whole thing together. This is both a prequel and a sequel game. You're welcome, everyone.
I had a slightly different take on the actual storyline, but that's an interesting thought.
Well, I mean, have you seen the fact that the main character has what resembles, if not actually is, a Team Galactic logo on their yukata? You know, Cyrus disappears at the end of the Gen 4 games. We don't know what happens to him. And, like, the Lord of Time plays a substantial role, and the God of Space in the conclusion of that narrative. So yeah, my called shot is that Cyrus got sent back in time and space to feudal Sinnoh and is doing something. I don't think he's necessarily acting as a bad guy, but I think that he's important.
Interesting take. I'm excited to see if that comes through.
It's probably not.
I mean, personally, my thought on the actual story was like, as you know, like, again, there's probably going to be natives. And what do people like doing? Following native mythology. Finding mythology and following that through to its conclusion. Almost, you know, just like a piece together this clue from this ruin and, you know, kind of follow it through. Like, in the Sinnoh games, there's the Snowpoint Temple where Regigigas sleeps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that feels to me like you're gonna, if that still exists, either you're putting Regigigas there, or, you know, you're following some clue, some cave drawing or something, following it through to this other province, and then finding this temple, and then finding the clue to the next area that you need to go to.
God, I hope we don't have another Reggie goddamn scavenger hunt. I just finished the last one.
It's gonna happen.
Fuck me. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the long-term playability of these games. As we all know, like, at least since Pokemon X and Y, Pokemon games in general have been designed not with an eye just towards the initial, you know, 20 to 40 hour RPG playthrough, but the full 999 hour save file of what keeps you playing long-term, even after the game, quote unquote, is finished. So, I suppose the question becomes then, is Legends going to follow suit? If so, what does its in-game loop look like? What activities or, like, compelling options does it offer to continue to engage you once you've completed it? Or is this going to be the first Pokemon game in a very long time where you simply play the game, and then you beat the game, and then you put the game down?
Well, I think obviously there's the stated desire to make a Pokedex. So I almost think like a living Dex is kind of the idea or the hope, you know, going around and finding even all those little 1.5% chance encounters in every area, which will almost certainly take longer than your main storyline. I feel like you could easily do some small DLCs for random mythics and other legends. If we're going to go after Arceus, there may be a Giratina thing, you know, something like that. Hopefully, you know, they've got shiny hunting. That would be really cool to be able to fill your Pokedex and have alternate entries for your standard versus your shiny, you know, something like that. That's pretty much all I've got off the cuff.
The way that this is being marketed, I don't suspect there's going to be a giant end game loop for this. I think the end game loop is largely going to continue to live in Sword and Shield and or the remakes that are coming out in conjunction, depending on what becomes the main game until Gen 9. And I think that's actually okay. Like some games, it's okay for the hero's journey to be the hero's journey and then be done. And RPGs, single-player RPGs tend to follow that mindset during development.
And especially open-world games, where you have the open world to be your end-game loop already.
That's fair. My big question, ultimately, is whether there is going to be multiplayer for Pokemon Legends. Like we know from that statement, they had a single sentence where they said it was a single-player action RPG. But to me, that doesn't actually tell the story, because, like, to a certain way of thinking, all the Pokemon games are single-player RPGs, right? Like, the main campaign is a single-player experience. You're not ever experiencing it multiplayer. But they still have multiplayer connectivity and multiplayer features that are a big part of the experience. Pokemon is a social game at the end of the day, and it always has been. And so I think what's going to be really telling for me in the long term is whether that holds true for Legends or not, and we just don't know yet. You know, are we going to be able to trade with each other? Are we going to be able to battle? Is Legends going to be the, quote, main cartridge for the rest of the generation? Is VGC going to migrate to Legends? Or I honestly expect, like you stated, Anna, that that's probably going to remain Sword and Shield. That both Brilliant Diamond, Sparkling Pearl and Legends are going to do their own thing, and that VGC and competitive play and just the things that we normally expect of Pokemon games will continue to live in Sword and Shield for probably another 2 years. And that's also fine, but to me that also begs the question of, if Sword and Shield is expected to live and breathe to some degree for another 2 years, which would be like a total, by the time the next main series game comes out, that's almost 4 years of Sword and Shield, maybe actually 4 years of Sword and Shield. Does Sword and Shield get more new content? Does it get another round of DLC at that point? What would you like to see to make that prospect a little bit more palatable?
It's hard to say. Like, it is a long kick out, certainly for, like, development time. A note on connectivity, I think you're going to get home connectivity and nothing else, most likely. And you'd be running off of Sword and Shield cartridge for VGC and competitive and trading and everything else, because the systems for that are already built there, even if they're subpar. We won't get into that. More DLC. I'm not sure they're going to do that. I think as soon as Legends is done, the pivot is straight into Gen 9. They're not going to waste development resources on DLC for a four-year-old game. It's just not going to happen.
I honestly don't trust them enough to make a multiplayer system for an open world game that would actually work out properly, because the multiplayer system in the open world really did not work for Sword and Shield, in my opinion.
No, no. And to be clear, I don't think, based on how they presented it, I don't think there's any chance that there's going to be like a wild area multiplayer situation where you see other players running around in the world. That's not going to happen. They fucked it up the first time. It's not going to be a thing. What I'm asking is whether there is going to be the ability to direct connect to your friends to trade or battle or do other things. Even, you know, maybe like a union room situation if you wanted to really pie in the sky it, but I don't think there's any world in which you're just going to have your buddy in your world.
Honestly, ideally, they could do it that way. Instead of trying to pull a ton of people in that are connected, just pull in your friends. Being able to request and join in would be cool. But that is netcode that they would have to write then.
Like, the reason why I say I think you're going to get home connectivity and that's it is the fact that I look at the development cycle here for this. They just finished, like, the DLC for Crown Tundra. And yeah, they have like a whole extra year, but the cell that they're trying to make here, like for the size and scope of like an open, like a good open world game, like they're going to be pushing up right against deadline as it is. Like, and if they're not going to migrate away from Sword and Shield, like to do trading and everything else, like drop your babies into home, throw them into Sword and Shield. You can do whatever you want with them. Like, it's an easy way for them to say, we don't have to spend development resources developing these features. We can focus on the core RPG experience. We already have games that we know you own to facilitate this, and let the remakes in Sword and Shield just handle it.
I agree for the most part, particularly the connectivity in Legends. I think, like Anna said, it'll be home, and that's it, if that. I do think it'll be an Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire situation where VGC goes to the remake. You know, just kind of updated graphics, finish out the decks, and move things up into the remakes.
I mean, I think that could go either way, right? Like, one of two things is going to happen. Either Brilliant Diamond Sparkling Pearl is going to have a national dex, in which case you're absolutely correct. VGC will migrate. Although, even still, that's still only a maybe, because I can't imagine Brilliant Diamond Sparkling Pearl having Dynamax. And so the question then becomes, how much do they want Dynamax in VGC 22?
I don't think they're going to trust another developer to be the VGC fucking hub.
Well, I mean, that's fair, but I think it's also very clear just from the trailer that we got for BDSP that they're running the Sword and Shield battle system. Like, they did not design the battle animations or any of that back work. Like, that whole HUD, that's the Sword and Shield HUD. Like, they just, they copy-pasted that shit wholesale.
Well, I guess my point is, when you're working with a third party to do, like, ongoing support for a game, like, if they're a contract partner, you're paying them for that service. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they're the developer for that. Granted, it's a remake. They're just remaking what Game Freak already did. But why pay someone else to do something you could just do yourself on your existing game that everybody already is using? And like you mentioned, like, the Dynamax, Gigantamax is a huge, it's a huge issue. So, like, as we speculate, I think that there are challenges and resource challenges and either development money, like whatever, that will point the way to how this is going to be navigated.
We'll talk more about BDSP in our next episode, but I am of the opinion personally that even though it is not a Let's Go game, I think it's going to take a lot of cues from Let's Go. I think Let's Go was very successful as a low investment remake game, if that makes sense. Not in that they didn't invest a lot of resources into it, because they did, but because they said, we're not going to go all the way and make it in the exact style of the newest games with a national dex, with everything. We're just going to make a remake in a style that we think is fun with the Pokemon that are appropriate and let it live its own ecosystem. And I think that BDSP is going to be similar. I would not be shocked if it got a national dex, including the Sword and Shield mon, I would be surprised. I expect it to be the Diamond and Pearl Pokedex with whatever goodies they decide to throw in on top of it. I agree, ultimately, that I think that Sword and Shield is going to remain the primary cartridge of the game for the next 2 years, which is going to give it a really long shelf life. If I'm being realistic, I expect that they are going to patch in the additional Pokemon that are introduced in the other two titles. They are going to complete the Pokedex in Sword and Shield, and that is going to be basically the sum and total of the upgrades that it receives over the next 2 years. If I am being optimistic and hopeful, I think that we'll talk more about this next episode, but I think there's a very real chance that Megas come back in BDSP. And I think that they could do something very cool that would be, in the grand scheme of large DLC projects, fairly low investment from a resources standpoint, where they could port the Kalos region over. They could give us one big final DLC for Sword and Shield, and they could give us post-game Kalos and say, hey, the Kalos region has changed. It's deeply related to the Galar region. Go help them out, explore, do these things. Check out their history of war and kind of close that loop. Give us the Pokemon Z experience that we never got to have. Put those new Pokemon into the game and reintroduce Megas to the main series if they choose to do so. That would be my pie in the sky, absolute best case scenario. And I don't think it is impossible or entirely unreasonable, because as we're going to talk about on this show, not too awful long from now, when you remove them from the hardware limitations of the 3DS, all the models in X and Y scale really fucking high. It would not be, in the grand scheme of game development, to reskin that existing region into a style that makes it more compatible with Sword and Shield would not be an unreasonable development investment for a major DLC release, which would be, you know, paid ultimately, right? Do I think they're going to do it? Probably not. This is tinfoil hat on, shooting a shot in the dark. But that would be my wish. If I could wish on a star and Papa Masuda would go from my mouth to his ear, and he would say, you know what? Yes, Jolly. Yes, I love you, my good, sweet boy. I'm going to give you the thing that you want. I would want post-game Kalos, and I don't think it's impossible.
Yeah, I mean, the stories are heavily intertwined. Like, there's plenty of material to mine there. I think it's just a concern over development resources. Like, the business decisions will ultimately determine direction.
That's fair. And I'm really interested to know, like, what the development situation is in-house with Game Freak. Like, what we've seen for a decade now, right, is that they had two dev teams, one of which was always working on the next big release, the next generation, while the other was working on the 0.5 games, your remakes, your remastered editions, your Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire, your Ultra Sun Ultra Moon. What is that two team doing now? Have they all been folded into one team to work on the huge project that is Legends? Or are they, like, you know, is that two team who gave us the Sword and Shield DLC pass, could it be that they're working on more Sword and Shield DLC right now? Like, we don't know.
I think there's three possibilities. Either they've been rolled into Legends because it's an aggressive timetable for a very ambitious game. They have been put on more DLC to extend the life of Sword and Shield, knowing that Gen 9 is going to be further out, or they're already working on Gen 9.
Yeah, I think any of those is very possible. Again, it's just one of those situations where I wish we could see through the window. And even if Masuda and Game Freak were answering these questions, I wish we could trust their answers, because they're proven to be goddamn liars. you love to speculate about your favorite frenemy of a company. All right, well, last topic that I really wanted to hit on this particular topic, I think personally that the concept, the conceit of Pokemon Legends is really, really neat. There are all sorts of legends in the Pokemon world that are ancient and interesting and exciting that we just don't know enough about. And so from that perspective, I could see this series really having legs as a vehicle to explore those things. So guys, what other stories, legendary Pokemon, mythics that have been overlooked in the franchise or not given their proper moment in the spotlight, would you like to see given that spotlight in a future Pokemon Legends title?
So I think the easy and obvious answer is the Kalos War. Like, actually in the actual wartime, I think that's kind of the off-the-cuff easy one. You could also look at stuff like the original time that Kyogre and Groudon did their thing. Personally, though, I'd really love to see some of the mythics get a cool story. I as I said earlier, I love my little pixies, and a lot of the mythics are pixies.
I think that there's a couple big winners. If we're talking specifically about big legends, it would be cool to see Lugia and the three birds, like, is a big one. Like, there's obviously a very rich culture surrounding those Pokemon in Johto, like the towers and everything else. It'd be really cool to investigate. I honestly think Alola is also very rich for that. Like, the Tapus are really cool as protectors of the islands, and playing like a Legends title that really investigates their relationship together and any sort of like rivalry between the islands and the spirits opposed would be really, really, really interesting.
I agree with Anna. On an opposite note, I don't feel like the dragons, particularly the Gen 5 dragons, have much of a pull for Legends as much as compared to the other ones.
It's ironic that you say that, because that was my immediate answer. I'm not sure where that's coming from, because Kyurem is begging for a Pokemon Legends title. The fact that Kyurem, Reshiram, and Zekrom were once the proto-dragon, the dragon, and split into three to pursue the opposing goals of truth and ideals, that is a story that begs to be told. Like, it reeks of legend. How much of that is literal and true, and how much of that is mythologized? Like, there's so much there to potentially explore. It also gives us the opportunity to see the original dragon, something fans have been asking for since Pokemon Black and White, to see the complete fusion. Yeah, I think Pokemon Legends Kyurem would be a slam dunk, and I think that of the ones we discussed, it's the most likely to be greenlit in the short term, because if you're following along on the calendar, Unova is the next region up for the glow-up treatment. So, like, yeah, I think that there's a lot there, actually.
Yeah, it would also give us an opportunity to really get a sense more for the Swords of Justice and the genies, because I feel like of all the legends, like in all of the games, they were the most underserved, just like in their main game representation.
That's very fair. Yeah, they don't get a lot.
Yeah, that was my next part of that thought, to be honest, were the other legendaries in Gen 5.
Honestly, I totally forgot like about the dragons thing in Unova, because all I see when I think of Unova is ninjas in red. So
honestly, I don't know. The dragons didn't make that big of an impact on me. And I might just be a grumpy curmudgeon back then, but the cutscene in Black and White 2 with the dragon fusion was just
Absorbo fusion. It was so much fun.
Absorbo fusion.
Yeah, I really like that cutscene.
It felt corny to me.
You liked it at the time, Celeste. You're just being a grump.
I didn't like it at the time. What are you talking about?
I will go back and check the goddamn tape. You liked it at the time.
No, she didn't. I liked it at the time. She didn't.
Yeah.
Okay. I do think that the Kalos War would be another really interesting one, though. It's one of those things that would have to be handled extremely carefully, right? Because it's a war that we know canonically killed people in Pokemon, which is something that the Pokemon Company would have to be incredibly cautious about tackling. But I do think that there are angles that they could approach that story from that would be very palatable. You know, very much like marketing your character and whatever faction they represent as being a part of a third party who wants to end the fighting and help people. Like, you know, as long as you are cautious of how you draw the curtain and present the story on screen and what your protagonist is representing, I think that there is a very strong story to be told there.
Yeah, we'd finally get to watch Mega's fight with Dynamax Pokemon and some epic fucking combat.
Well, I mean, if you follow the lore, there weren't Megas at the time of the Great Kalos War. Megas were created by the weapon that killed all the Pokemon in the Great Kalos War. Like, Megastones are fossilized Pokemon.
Gross.
Yeah. Megas from the top down are maybe the darkest thing Pokemon has ever introduced. From the fact that the stones are all corpses, to the fact that if you read any of the Pokedex entries in Sun and Moon, you never want a Mega Evolve again. It's terrible.
And the fact that Gigantamax is a tool of war is very weird to me, to be honest, because it's just a projection for the most part.
Listen, we do this in stadiums, like for entertainment. It was a method of mass murder, but now we dogfight.
You've got to bear in mind that the Dynamax and the Gigantamax that we see in Sword and Shield is refined and industrialized by Rose and his company. Like, that's not, you know, they take the meteorite that falls that you find and they turn it into a fucking Apple Watch so that you can Dynamax. Like, regardless of how they were channeling the power of old what's his nuts, Eternatus, back in like medieval Galar to fight on the field of war, it was not what we do now. And probably didn't look quite so pixely and fucking, you know.
More scary, less hologrammy.
I think it would be funny if it was completely fucking random, just wherever the big bone dragon showed up, like shit went wild.
That's probably what happened.
Yeah, knowing, honestly, that would even just be a really good angle for that story, even if it wanted to be more of a Galar-centric than a Kalos-centric story, is where the fuck did Eternatus even come from? Like, what is he? Is he an Ultra Beast? Is there a tie to Alola there? Like, we don't really know anything about him other than that he's bad. He is where the Dynamax comes from, and he will destroy the fucking world because Chairman Rose sees a problem and goes, this can't even wait one goddamn second.
Listen, we're going to have a power shortage someday. We need to solve this right now by unleashing an Armageddon-causing monstrosity.
Yeah. No power in thousands of years, or giant skeleton dragon that's bent on destroying everything.
Listen, young child, if we run out of power, it'll be Armageddon. So I'm releasing Armageddon right now.
Rose is wild, man. With his fucking dad bod shorts. Fucking. We went from Lusamine to Rose.
Well, I think Rose was on some kind of drug at the time of Sword and Shield. There's no other explanation there.
Rose is just on cocaine all the time.
He's just Elon Musk. It's just Poke Musk.
We've gone way off topic.
We've gone entirely off topic.
But it's hilarious.
But yeah, like, I think that ultimately, like, if you look at it objectively, almost every region has like a potentially strong foundation for a legends title. I mean, the only one I can think of offhand that doesn't really is Kanto, ironically. But even still, you could tie that pretty easily to Johto, and you know, they're sister regions. You can make that work. Because yeah, unfortunately, Mewtwo is relatively young. You can't really do a Mewtwo story in a Pokemon Legends game. I imagine you could do a Mew story, although canonically they found Mew in South America, so maybe not. I don't know.
Mew gets around. World Traveler and all that.
Not only that, Mew and Mewtwo have been done so much, though.
Yeah, but they're not going to stop, because that's where their money is. Like, that's just something that we have to accept. Like, they are going to go back to that original 151 well as often as people pay them to go back to it, and that people cannot stop paying them to go back to it. So,
to go off topic one more time, I do need to go back to the games that I was just super grumpy with and play them myself at some point, because that was a bad time. As Steven shakes his head.
Listen, all I'm going to remind you of is that Black and White has ninjas and knights, and also stairways that erupt from the earth in all the perfect spots. That's all you need to know about Black and White. Don't go back. Don't play it. In fact, if you own a copy, sell it.
It is an excellent experience, and y'all are some goddamn haters. I don't know why you take so much joy in getting my blood pressure up. I'm going to find an early grave, and it's going to be because of you assholes.
Don't worry. I'll write on it. It'll say, ended this. One Ferris wheel ride too many.
God, the Ferris wheel was weird. Like,
that was creepy. I'm sorry. Why are we going on a date with the weird, creepy villain guy? I don't know.
I mean, clearly you've never been on Tumblr.
I have not, and I'm happy I haven't.
In was just the Onceler. He was just the Onceler.
We will have this and more on our next episode of Last Burn Radio as we discuss BDSP.
Oh, and that's a fun acronym too.
All right. Well, on that wonderful note, that's going to be a wrap for today, guys. We're going to be back in 2 weeks, where we are going to deep dive into the other new game on the horizon in the Pokemon franchise, which is Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl. We are going to take a look at, what that game may or may not look like. We got a little taste of that in this episode. They're so intertwined, it's hard to talk about one without talking about the other, especially in regards to what are they going to be in a franchise where they are both like relatively novel, even though we've done remakes before. But these are clearly very different remakes. So you'll get to join us as we talk about what we hope to get out of these games, what we think it means for the franchise that we are seeing main series games developed out of House of Game Freak, and maybe even if we were Papa Masuda, who we would put the Poke Keys in the hands of. So you can look forward to that. Now that we are back on our bullshit on this show, we'd love to hear from you. Be sure to get at us. Let us know what you think of the content that we're making. You can reach us by email at blastburnradio@gmail.com. And be sure to follow the show on various social media at Blastburn Radio. We'll keep you up to date on what we're doing around the web. As always, you can follow me personally at BBR Jolly on Twitter.
I'm at Celeste Lost.
I'm at Poker Ranger Pat.
And I'm at Incidentally Anna.
And I'm not doing this time. I have shilled enough shill. Anna, shill for your own dollars.
Shill for my own dollars. You can check out my company, Mythic Portal Games, online. We sell a variety of high-quality art assets to make your game come to life, as well as music. You can find us on Roll20 and Astral if you are into that stuff. I highly recommend a little role-playing excursion in this age of COVID. Escapism is a very good thing. And I'm going to hand it back to Steven because I don't feel right saying the goodbye.
Well, actually, I think that it is important to take just a moment because this is our boy's very first Blast Burn Radio episode, and all of our listeners may not know where to find all his bullshit. Pat, is there anything you'd like to plug?
Not particularly. A lot of what I do is communicated through my Twitter at PokerRangerPat. Technically, I mean, you can find me every couple of days on Twitch at PokerRangerPat. That's pretty much all I do.
Follow the boy on Twitch. It's a good time. It's a lot of fun. You should come out and laugh as he attempts, like, absolutely stupidly punishing Nuzlocke and wipes for the 12th goddamn time.
Look, I had to stop doing some of those because, like, I ran out of time. I just don't have time to keep restarting Ultrasound.
We laugh, but we'll be there someday.
Yes.
Yep, we're there soon.
It is a problem.
You guys are going to have significantly not as evil rule sets. Or at least not as evil people assigning you Pokemon.
I do want to thank everyone for joining us today. I want to give a very special thank you, as always, to my co-hosts, Anna Maservier, Celeste Dreyer, and Patrick Miller. For Blastburn Radio, I am Stephen Charbonneau. Thank you for listening, and I will see you next time.
Thanks for listening, folks.
See ya.
See you later.
Blastburn Radio is a production of Challenge Accepted Media. This episode was produced by Patrick Miller. If you enjoy Blastburn Radio, you can support us at patreon.com/challengeaccepted media. Pokemon and all related games and characters are the property and trademark of Nintendo, Game Freak, and the Pokemon Company. Opening music in today's episode includes Game On by Fishy off the OC Remix album, The Missing No Tracks. Check out this great album at missingno.ocremix.org. Battle music in today's episode provided by Glitch X City. Check out her work on YouTube or SoundCloud at Glitch X City. Closing music in today's episode is Professor Sycamore's theme remix, also by Glitch X City. Design work for Blastburn Radio Season 8 provided by Rachel Mondragon at Rachichu, Nathan at Fiery Dance, and Chisai at Chisai236. Check out their other work or contact them for commissions on Twitter. Blastburn Radio and its hosts are solely responsible for its content.